How do ordinary people get around to doing seemingly extraordinary things? Maxim Ivanov, the youngest ocean rower to cross the Atlantic.
The ocean does move and does push you back. And very often, these currents are stronger than us.
Hollis Belger, who raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for St. Jude's through soccer juggling.
My first summer, my goal was to raise $1,000. And that summer, I raised over $33,000.
And Sophie Rue, the young social entrepreneur who creates technology to connect off-grid communities in Malawi.
When we launched the Bloombox, it's almost like a spaceship has landed, and with a hand crank, the panels slide out into position like a blooming flower from above.
No doubt there's much to be said about excellent people and the traits that make them so. But today, we're more determined to find out what ties all of us together. To find out whether those who have achieved the extraordinary are truly built so different.
It was a very genuine and childlike curiosity I had.
I got to meet these really awesome high school kids with big dreams and ideas and no electricity in their classrooms.
I think I was always wanting to do something. That's why I tell people, like, find what motivates you and what lights a fire under you and start there.
I'm Crystal Chen, your host for this episode of Soul Searching. Join me and our three correspondents, Joe Fada, Ava Tiffany, and Alana Esposito, as we set out to untangle some common threads, not just between Max, Hollis, and Sophie, but also between them and listeners like you. Without further ado, Chapter 1, The Adventure, presented by Joe on Maxim Ivanov's journey across the Atlantic.
Max went searching for an adventure, motivated by his curiosity. Before this expedition, he had never rowed a day in his life, but he did grow up watching his father compete in extreme events.
He was the second Bulgarian to ever swim across the English Channel. He's been on tens of ultramarathons. He's also an Ironman.
So what began as a casual joke at dinner set them on a path towards an unforgettable adventure. Through lots of preparation with trainers, professional rowers, and ocean navigators, Max and his father set out to do what had never been done before. A rowing expedition across the Atlantic Ocean, beginning in Portimão, Portugal, and ending at the island of Barbados. The two spent months building their rowing boat, named Neverest, and dedicated hours each day to training.
One thing that I was aware of is that I believe that if I'd put so much effort into something, so much work, into something that I originally thought would be impossible, then that would inherently prove to me that I'm capable of things way beyond my original thought. And it would really push me to become more confident in the person that I am and in the work that I do. But this journey definitely had an enormous amount of unexpected turns and challenges that arose before the row and after the row.
While on the water, Max and his father faced dangerous weather, difficult currents, and directional challenges.
We would have very strong headwinds and 20, 30 foot waves. And that's very terrifying, especially if you're rowing during the night when it's pitch black and you can't see anything. And these huge waves hit you out of nowhere and knock you out of your seat.
Dealing with these challenges came a very particular mindset for Max, what he called the human anchor mindset.
I entered this space where I would only think about the things that were going on at the moment. I'd be so locked in the present and what was expected of me in the present that all good news and bad news was irrelevant to me, because I knew that all that was asked of me to do is eat, sleep, and row.
And that is exactly what they did. Max and his father spent 105 days at sea, rowing day in and day out. But their journey was only intended to last 75. Max told us that the hardest time he encountered on the water was in a part of the Atlantic called the doldrums.
The doldrums was a place where waves weren't very big. The wind wasn't as strong as we'd seen before. However, the winds and the waves never had a constant direction. Every 4 hours, the winds, the currents, the tides would change, sometimes in our favor, but very often, I'd say more often than not, against us. So I could give you a very specific example of what a day or a shift looked like in the doldrums. My dad's shift was just over. He gave me the rowing position. I started rowing. 1 hour passed, 2 hours pass. I'm done with my shift. I call my dad to come out the hatch. He comes out, sits on the rowing position. That doesn't take more than 2 minutes, right? So I've rowed for 2 hours. And for those 2 minutes, we lost all of my 2 hours of progress. We were fighting a current. Currents are kind of invisible. And very often, these currents are stronger than us. And we'd invest hours and hours and days of rowing towards a goal, but end up not even making any progress at all.
Max's journey may have put him in a truly unique setting, but Hollis too overcame physical limits. I give you chapter 2, The Inspiration, presented by Ava on Hollis Belger and her soccer juggling fundraiser.
I try so hard to not place my impact in the juggling, because then I'll get in my head, and then if I drop the ball, my shoe gets untied, the wind picks up, I get a bad touch, it happens. Like, I don't get 7,150 every single day. Like, it has to be a record day. I think there was one summer where it was 5,000, and I made it to like 4,000 something.
Even though Hollis faced setbacks and challenges throughout her journey, she has now raised over $747,000 for her nonprofit. However, juggling for Jude wasn't always this successful, and it actually began as a school assignment.
In fourth grade, I had to do this big research project on a person, place, or thing, and I chose St. Jude. And I just fell in love with their emphasis on hope. That was a really big thing. So then I started thinking, well, what if this summer I juggle every single day and see if people would sponsor me and then donate to St. Jude? My mom taught me how to, you know, kick the ball with your foot, toe down, and kick it back up, catch it, do it with the other foot, catch it, and try to do two in a row, try to do three in a row. And my first summer, my goal was to raise $1,000. And that summer, I raised over $33,000. And that's when I knew that this was going to be a lifetime endeavor.
And although Hollis sports some impressive juggling numbers, Juggling for Jude has expanded far beyond a summer fundraiser.
My record is now 7,157 consecutive touches, which took an hour and 16 minutes. Now that it's progressed, the emphasis has shifted from records. It's a year-round effort.
These progressions included creating year-round fundraising initiatives to reach her ultimate goal of raising $1 million.
The hardest part of the money was finding innovative ways to engage people. Corporate sponsorships is huge. Public speaking and awareness and advocacy, getting the word out there, media, like all of it. I sell soccer balls. You can buy soccer balls in exchange for donations too. Juggling lessons, like you have to figure out ways to engage people in your cause. It went actually international. There were people, professional soccer teams in Mexico and Europe doing it.
For Hollis, the work was deeper than her on-paper fundraising and juggling goals. What truly mattered was the people and community she's continued to show up for throughout the past 11 years.
When I went to St. Jude for the first time, and I also met so many other patients and patient families, that's when it really, really became a part of who I was.
She told me about two particularly impactful people in her life. Kayla, the first patient she met at St. Jude, who was successfully cured of her cancer.
When I met Kayla, that's when I really put a face and a name to my efforts. Now there was someone right in my backyard who I was fighting for.
And the second patient, Liv, a girl still being treated for her childhood cancer. Liv and Hollis met virtually.
We FaceTimed and we Zoomed and fostered this relationship together. We were drawing unicorns and talking. She was giving me her Christmas hauls.
Liv was officially in recovery before her cancer shockingly came back and ultimately ended her life far too early in September 2023. Hollis reminisced on her memory and how she fundamentally transformed her life.
Her campaigns was living the journey, because she just embodied what life should be. And at their funeral, they even said this. It was so beautiful. It's like, live, love to live. Live is literally my life's mission. Everything I do is for that girl at the end of the day, because it was like, I'm going to live the rest of my life for you and in honor of you. And I think it should be like universally experienced, having someone that you are fighting for and that is driving your impact. And that is something I wake up now every day and I'm so grateful for.
We were struck by both Hollis's and Sophie's sincere wishes to do good in the world for others. Here's chapter 3, The Innovation, presented by Alana on Sophie Rue and her social good startup, Bloombox.
Starting out, the goal was to provide my friend Faith with electricity in her classroom so that she could practice being an animator. The goal now is even bigger. I would really like for every student to have access to the highest possible quality resources in classrooms.
I had the privilege of talking to Sophie Rue, the founder of Bloombox, a venture seeking to support education for students in Malawi through physical learning spaces with technology powered by the sun and connected to students around the world. Her journey started in her backyard in Vancouver, Canada, after she saw firsthand the challenges of education without electricity while visiting a high school in Malawi to paint a mural. It's a journey that's led her back to Malawi, time and time again.
About 2 years ago, we installed the second Bloombox in Mulanje. And I just remember in that build, we would have to drive a couple hours every morning as the sun would rise through these green tea fields. And then the site would kind of open up on the road under this beautiful big mountain, and kids would flow in to like meet us at the car every day, and then we'd get to work on the job site. I think being on the job site from morning till night is my favorite thing ever. I feel like that's where I'm being actually productive. I think sometimes it's hard, like you feel a little powerless. I had been until I had Bloombox, but I felt very empowered.
For Sophie, empowerment is particularly important. She grew up in girls' schools, understanding the power in girls' education, and surrounded by the idea that she was capable of building the world she imagined. So the challenges that accompanied Bloombox were never insurmountable for Sophie.
I'm definitely changed by it. I've grown up with it, and I feel like sometimes it's really hard to separate myself from my work. I'm so invested in Bloombox that I feel like it's one of the biggest parts of myself. And I think it makes me more sensitive. It makes me have the courage to ask more questions. It gives me kind of legs to stand on in some big and scary circumstances.
And Sophie's learned a lot from it. From how electricity is generated from the solar cells, thanks to her physics teacher, to the structural integrity of shipping container structures with help from an architecture firm she worked with, to, in my eyes, a sincere understanding of how to enact the change you want to see in the world. Bloombox achieves this lofty goal of increasing access to education through the installation of repurposed shipping containers retrofitted with retractable solar panel roofs.
On the first day, when we launched the Bloombox, it's almost like a spaceship has landed. This pristine white shipping container with a low profile roof opens up with a hand crank, so the panels slide out into position, kind of like a blooming flower from above. The lights turn on and students start to flood around the space, and it's really cool to see them curious and excited to see what's going on. I think when the lights come on, that's a really exciting moment because it means the power is being inverted. And then these yellow sails come out to provide shade, and then picnic tables get rolled out for workspaces, and then computers. I think it's beautiful.
Sophie expressed this deep appreciation not only for the opportunities that she's had in the past, but for those that await her in the future too. Bloombox never seemed to be a destination, more like an experiment in what sort of good she could do in the world. From this very simple goal to solve a single problem for her friend, Faith, so that she could attend university, to wanting to see how far it could continue to go and grow. Yet, the most stunning thing to me about Sophie's story was the beauty in how it's still developing, both Bloombox as a venture and Sophie as a person.
I think it's one of the best things about me, but there's other stuff too. I think we let people see the parts that we think are more perfect sometimes. There's more levels than that. I try to, when I meet people, learn more about them than just, you know, what they produce in the world. But honestly, if my reputation is Bloombox, I think that's pretty okay.
We introduced you to some extraordinary feats, but we can see that they started as the simplest missions. For Max, to go on an adventure. For Hollis, to find what inspires you. And for Sophie, to solve a problem for the people you care about. Though their stories, in some ways, left us with even more questions, like, how small can you start to live more meaningfully?
Does physical discomfort have the same effects for everyone?
How do I find what lights a fire under me?
What does it mean to empower others?
They've also showed us acting on your values despite discomfort is both a transformative and ongoing process.
With grit and the right mindset, you can push beyond the physical limits of what you think is possible.
When you are impassioned and have people you are fighting for, nothing seems too hard.
There's no challenge you can't engineer a solution for.
Max, Hollis, and Sophie faced challenges and discomfort at every turn, each time they ventured into uncharted territory. But through resilience and wanting to succeed for the sake of others, these ordinary people emerged on the other side of extraordinary feats. Through these conversations, we learn something greater about our humanity, about facing, embracing, and growing from discomfort.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Soul Searching, available wherever you listen to podcasts. This episode was produced by Crystal Chen, Alana Esposito, Ava Tiffany, and Joe Fada, with support from the Stanford Storytelling Project. The music for this episode was from Free Music Archives, Blue Dot Sessions, and Pixabay. We'd like to give a special thanks to Max, Hollis, and Sophie, our three amazing interviewees, Laura, and the entire Sound Stories class, for making this episode possible. We hope you enjoyed soul searching with us.